This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. So great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. It's a beautiful afternoon, a high temperature of 78 with a breezy conditions, and we're going to have that again tomorrow, 76 degrees this hour.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the Dow off about 36 points now, the NASDAQ gaining ground higher by 22 or a quarter percent, and the S&P up 1 point. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down a third of a percent. Target has hit the bullseye and then some with its latest earnings report. The company posted a 6.5% increase in year-to-year comparable sales. That was the best gain in 13 years. Profit handily beat forecasts, and Target is hiking its earnings predictions for the whole year. That stock up 4.5%. Rising home prices, rising mortgage rates, and a scarcity of properties are taking a toll on the housing market. The National Association of Realtors says existing home sales fell last month 0.7% to the slowest pace in more than 2 years. Now, in less than an hour, we'll get the minutes from the last Fed policy meeting, and also big gains for oil today. Crude up 3% to $67.84 a barrel. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll see if Wall Street is reacting in any way to the president's legal problems. And as Elisa mentioned, retailers, including Target, are enjoying an upward trend.
We'll see what some wealthy folks are spending their money on and what that may say about the wider economy. Personal Finance Wednesday, how to make sure you make the most of your job skills before they become obsolete. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Information you can bank on. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The CEO of Target says the current consumer environment is the best he's ever seen. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, the report on sales of existing homes is out. While the Fed will release the minutes of its most recent meeting in less than an hour, we're joined by Joel Naroff, president of Naroff Economic Advisors in Holland, Pennsylvania. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Joel. What do we see in sales of homes, and what does it mean for the economy?
Well, it looks like the sales of homes have been trending down. It's the fourth consecutive month of softer sales. Existing home sales have really been going nowhere this year. And when you add to that rising prices, rising mortgages, and really a lack of inventory, it doesn't look like the housing market is going to get out of its own way anytime soon. And we're seeing it not just in the existing home market, but the new home market. We get the July sales tomorrow on new homes, but I don't expect that they're going to be great either.
Are we seeing in the economy, you know, that this has been a very long period in which the economy has been getting better? Where are we along that line right now?
Well, I think what's happened is that the economy had settled into a moderate growth phase, and then it hit the sugar high of tax cuts. And consumers, businesses are spending a lot more because they suddenly have a lot more money in their pockets or their paychecks. At least some people have a lot more money in their paychecks. But in terms of really wages and the fundamentals for most workers, we're not seeing wages rise a whole lot. Millennials, who would normally be the entryway into the housing market, are not buying at a great pace. So essentially, the economy is in good shape now. More uncertainty as we look toward the end of this year and especially 2019.
With houses, you touched on the lack of inventory, that there's just not enough houses out there available. What do you think is leading to that? Is still a lot of people underwater, or maybe something else?
People are just not moving in the way they used to. First of all, when you take a look at some of the numbers, recently we got some numbers on people who are actually relocating to take another job. there are very few people who are doing that anymore. And that used to create a surge in the market as people move from either one city to another or one part of the region to another part of the region. They'd sell their homes, they'd buy their homes. That kind of mobility has to a very large extent dissipated. And you add to that that there are still some people who either don't have any equity or have minimal amounts of equity. You don't see that kind of movement. The idea that I'm just going to sell my house because I don't like it anymore, I'm going to move to a different part of the town, that concept is gone. That kind of mix-up as far as the market is concerned, where you have people moving from one place to another, is gone, and I think that that's creating the problem on the inventory side.
Now, the lack of inventory, as you've touched on, it's at least one of the things leading to rising home prices. Is that, while maybe frustrating for people who do want to buy a house, is that maybe a good thing, given the fact that housing values dropped so much during the crisis?
Well, that's very much true, that the situation in most parts of the country, not everywhere, but in most or many parts of the country, we've wiped out the declines that we got when the housing bubble burst. So people are now looking at positive equity, and they're beginning to build on it. That hopefully, if it continues to see price increases at a moderate pace, will allow people to have the wherewithal to potentially sell their homes, take the equity, and buy another home. So to some extent, it's good. But right now, the lack of inventory is just artificially reducing demand, because if you can't find a house you want, you're not going to spend a lot of money on something you really don't want to move into.
What kind of impact is the world economy right now on the United States economy?
I think what we're seeing is uncertainty. We're not seeing quite yet, real economic impacts. We should start seeing things such as rising prices over the second half of this year, over the remainder of this year, because the tariffs are putting pressures on businesses. They're raising costs, and those costs, if they continue to stay up, are going to have to be passed through. And that's the first thing we'll start to see. We also have to recognize that some industries who export, if they're facing tariffs, they're going to be cutting back, and we are seeing that. We have some issues in the farm sector. We have some issues in some of the manufacturing companies that actually ship out of the U.S. but now are facing tariffs that were put on to meet the U.S. tariffs. So there's a lot of uncertainty right now. We're only starting to see the impacts. Those impacts should really start showing up in the fall and winter. So right now, that's not the case.
Thanks for spending a few minutes with us today, Joel. Joel Naroff is president of Naroff Economic Advisors in Holland, Pennsylvania.
Coming up, Target's top executive raves about how the current economy is benefiting retail.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Target CEO Brian Cornell says the company saw unprecedented growth in same-store sales and foot traffic during the second quarter. Let's delve into Target and retail. Craig Johnson is joining us, president of Customer Growth Partners, based in New Canaan, Connecticut. Craig, let's begin with what the Target CEO is saying. Seems to be pretty in love with the economy these days.
Well, the economy has been a great tailwind for a lot of retailers, but the story at Target is not simply the fact that people have jobs, and when they have jobs, you have money, and then they spend more. This is a company that's gone through a stunning turnaround over the last couple of years, and they're seeing the kind of growth they haven't had since the halcyon days of the first several years in this century, in the low 2000s. So this is just a stunning turnaround.
Are we able to tell, is Target pulling money from other retailers by the changes that you're talking about, or is it just people are spending more money in general?
Well, people are certainly spending more money in general. Put it to you this way. Overall retail sales, all sectors, all categories, is up about 5% this year. Target sales are up about 7%. So in a sense, they're slightly outpacing the market growth, but the overall market is growing. So 5 out of that 7-point increase is due to the overall economy. But they are capturing an outsized share of the overall growth.
What are they doing to get people in the store? I mean, some of this is online, but a lot of it is people going to a store.
Yeah, the great thing that we're seeing, their traffic growth, traffic which means both footfall and also means transaction velocity in the store, this is the highest it's been, again, since 12 or 15 years ago, and the strongest it's been. And it's interesting because, yes, their online growth has been 41% from a smaller base, and that's providing part of the overall traffic growth. But the in-store traffic is accounting for about two-thirds of their overall 6% traffic growth. So it's really a very balanced growth situation. And the reason is that they've rediscovered after years of losing it, they've rediscovered their core style DNA. And by capturing that again, the sense of fashion and style, the old Target line, they have that back again in spades, whether on the apparel side or the home side.
Who are their biggest competitors, and what are the competitors doing to stay, try to get ahead?
Well, they operate in a pretty crowded retail field, so their most direct, not perfect competitor, the most direct competitor is, of course, Walmart, but they compete against Amazon, and they compete against the department stores in part, Kohl's and Macy's. So they have a very wide range of competitors, which means they have to stay on their toes and they can't ignore any areas. And, whether it's apparel or like toys, they have a terrific toy department, and they're actually benefiting from Toys R Us's demise. So they're really operating on all eight cylinders.
Thanks so much for great insight. Craig Johnson, president of Customer Growth Partners in New Canaan, Connecticut. By the way, Target stock today up 4%, and over the last year, it's up 53%.
Still ahead on Personal Finance Wednesday, updating your job skills so you can remain a viable employee.
WBBM News Time 12:25, a check of the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Elmhurst BMW. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, not a lot of movement today for stocks. The Dow is down 35 points, or about a tenth of a percent, while the NASDAQ hanging on to a gain of 27 points, or a third of a percent. S&P adding 2. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg down a third of a percent. Crude oil futures are way up, gaining more than 3%, or a gain of more than $2, and right now closing in on $68 a barrel. Chevron and Exxon are among the top three best performers among the blue chips. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Approaching harvest is pushing corn and soybeans lower. We have December corn down 5 at 369 and a quarter. November beans down 13 at 873. Good yields, the big yields expected on those. Tighter supplies out of Europe on wheat has wheat higher. We have December wheat up 1.25 at 549. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal.
Thanks, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are hanging near the flat line. We'll see what's affecting the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday, making sure your job skills are keeping up with a rapidly changing workplace.
Also on the financial front, it pays to plan ahead for long-term care.
A beach hazard warning remains in effect for Lake Michigan through mid-afternoon.
House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi says impeaching President Trump is not a priority, despite the conviction of his former campaign manager and guilty plea from his ex-lawyer.
On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials down 35, the NASDAQ up 26, S&P 500 up by a point.
Breezy, sunshine in Chicagoland, pleasant day, high of 78 degrees. That's right about where we are, 76 O'Hare, 77 Midway, 74 along the lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
And we're talking with Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Heartland & Company in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Jim.
Thank you.
Are you seeing any reaction today to the president's legal issues?
Surprisingly muted. A little bit of an effect in the Dow, but I think what the markets are saying is we're going to ignore this for the time being, let history play itself out, let the process play itself out. But while we're waiting, the economy is strong, profits are strong, as the head of Target said today, he's never seen the consumer environment more favorable. So you're dealing with blowout earnings, strong revenues, terrific cash flow, stock buybacks, deals, and the market's going to put off worrying about any problems until the markets absolutely have to, if they have to.
Because that could be a trouble here at home and also overseas.
Yeah, well, I think what would affect the markets, if the process degenerated to the point where it started to affect consumer behavior, consumer confidence, and business spending, that's where you would have a real and noticeable and sudden effect on equity prices. But until that's something that would unfold over time. And right now, it's probably the second inning of this whole process to see where this goes and how it carries out. So I think the market is comfortable and justifiably comfortable to keep it in the background as a cloud in the horizon, but let the sunshine shine through in the process.
Is that, for the most part, Ben, what investors have done throughout the president's time in office, whether it's tweets or different tariff discussions, trade war talk, that Wall Street's kind of taking the wait and see what the long term is going to look like?
Well, I think they're focusing on much of his economic policy is embraced by Wall Street. Not the tariffs, not the trade war, but the lower taxes, the less regulation, the uninvolvement or less involvement of government in business. All of that has unleashed animal spirits, improved business confidence, and it's filtered down to consumer confidence. So what the markets are doing is ignoring the parts of Trump that they don't like personality-wise. Hoping the parts of his policy that they don't like don't come to fruition, that this whole trade issue is gamesmanship on his part. And there is a school of thought says that he's going to announce a deal with Mexico, that therefore Canada is going to fall into place, and that he has more cards than people understand with China. And the markets some part of the markets are assuming he may actually win this thing and that it's not going to degenerate into something terrible. So the long-winded answer to your question is, for the moment, the markets are focusing on those parts of the economic of the Trump agenda that they like, ignoring his personality and ignoring the downside risk until they become more visible and real.
In our last segment, we talked about the strong retail sales. I guess a two-part question to you. Do you think that can last, or the fundamentals there for that to last? And does that at all trickle into any other sectors of the market?
Well, it is a very important sign. You know, the negative had been that wage growth was low and the consumers were not going to participate in what was going on. But in fact, what's happening is that wages are growing somewhat, incomes are growing somewhat. And it's manifesting itself in retail sales. Retail sales have really been stronger than expected and more consistently over the last couple of weeks. Every retailer has surprised on the upside, particularly the high-end retailers, but even companies like Walmart. So how that will trickle through, I think it trickles through to people who supply the retailers. It trickles through to other consumer goods because it's a sign of consumer confidence. And you have to say that this economy has defied all expectations, all worries. You have 24% profit growth the last quarter, mathematically lower, but still good profit growth going forward. And so I think the feeling is, let's take advantage of this where we seem to be in a unique period for corporate profitability. It's spreading through the rest of the economy and consumers and even somewhat to wages. So that's a key to driving stock prices higher, not lower, unless one of these black swans appears. You know, those of us who've been around a while remember the whole Richard Nixon affair and how that turned very dark very quickly and did, in fact, affect the economy and the markets. But we're not there yet in this cycle.
Jim, when we talk about the success of the retailers right now, how much of that is online retail?
Well, it had been online retail until recently, but it's spreading to regular retailers also, and many of the retailers have started to learn how to integrate their floor space with their internet and make them work for each other. So clearly online is the fastest growing part of it, but retailers have learned how to react and integrate, and actual online retail is now doing better also.
Toll Brothers reported pretty good earnings. What does that tell us with the wealthier spending their money on? What does that tell us?
Yeah, that absolutely speaks to the fact, you know, housing in general has not done well the last few months due to issues of affordability and availability. But with the Toll Brother, they are a luxury builder. And what that says is that people with money have confidence, are making money, stocks are up, their real estate values are up, and they're willing to spend it on high-end housing. And that's a very good sign to anybody whose market is the high-end consumer.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Jim. Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Heartland & Company in New York. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, keeping job skills sharp in a rapidly evolving work environment.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. This afternoon, the focus on the workplace and keeping job skills up to date. We're joined by Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President, Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. Rick, I'm assuming it depends on the industry, but how quickly can job skills become obsolete?
Well, they absolutely can happen overnight. And one of the things that people tell you that you need to think outside the box in order to make yourself relevant to the new industries, the first thing you have to do is figure out what kind of box you're in. Many of us aren't even aware of sort of the box that we're sitting inside of and what we need to do to get out of it. And I think that's just a basic sort of an inventory. If you've been doing the same job for 10, 12, 15 years, you need to get some outside input as to exactly what you are doing and how much of it's relevant.
Given the fact that there's just, you have so many people who are employed, how important is it still that you do a good job when you finally get that interview?
Well, it's critical to do a good job in the interview, but most people's mistake in interview is to talk about what they want and who they are. That's fine, but not if I'm not interested. So the critical issue in the interview is to identify as soon as you can and to focus your ability and talents to the person that you're talking to. If you can solve my problem, but I don't want it solved, you talking about it isn't going to get you anywhere. That's a critical mistake to make.
What are the fundamental skills?
So if you're talking about basics in terms of being able to be available to other opportunities or in general, if you're talking about in the interview, the fundamental issue is to identify what the other person wants and figure out how what you've already done aligns with what they appear to want. If you're talking about just interview skills in general or ability to fit into an organization, one of the things that's really important is to practically apply what you've done. In other words, just because you've done something doesn't mean I'm interested unless you can give me the ROI on it. And also to develop your social skills. Selling is not communicating, and to convince somebody of something is a skill unto itself for a salesperson. But the changing work environments are far more team structured and collaborative. The pyramids where you had this hierarchy don't really exist anymore. So your ability to really listen and capture information and work with other people and communicate is at a premium like it's never been.
I was reading this morning about the shift in the economy. It was likened to a tsunami, an upcoming tsunami, where the STEM industries in particular and other technologies changing so fast.
Yeah, it's the life cycle for businesses, it gets shorter and shorter in a two-year period to a company that might have existed for 12 to 15 years. And the other thing that we know, because we've studied it, is we're really bad at predicting the future. The one thing we know is we're bad at it. And so while everyone's identifying artificial intelligence and genomics and drones and the Internet of Things as places to pay attention, just the general idea of bioscience at large, it kind of goes unnoticed, and yet almost everything that we're going to be looking at in the future is about the well-being of elder care or life expectancy, all kind of go back into the biosciences, which is going to be, the computers are going to be subordinate to that in the future.
Rick Cobb, always good information. Thanks for being with us. Rick is Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas.
And join us this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. Still to come, Today, protecting yourself and your family by planning for long-term care.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's part two of Personal Finance Wednesday. Long-term care can be costly and complex if you have not planned ahead. We're going to get some help from Tony Ogorek, founder of Ogorek Wealth Management in Buffalo, New York. Thanks for joining us today, Tony. Let's first define long-term care.
Well, Chris, long-term care tends to be when you are you lose the ability to do what we call activities of daily living, such as eating, bathing, transferring, clothing, things of that nature. And there are various phases of it. So, you know, you may start off with a sort of independent care where you're in a place and you're able to cook, do whatever for yourself. And then, you know, over a period of time, you may need additional additional services. And then finally, at the end, if you need skilled nursing care, which requires the care of a registered nurse, then you would be in a nursing facility. But there's a wide spectrum of things. It isn't just being in a quote-unquote nursing home.
This is, when do people traditionally start considering what to do in those final years, a question of long-term care, and how to pay for it?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because it really, in my experience, you know, it's based on what their personal experience has been with their family. If they have people who just die, then they think, well, I don't need long-term care because I've never seen a need for it. Now, people who've had, parents in a facility or have dealt with, an illness that's gone on for a few years, they tend to understand the need for it, and actually they're rather proactive about it. So the unfortunate part is, you know, people look at it through the lens of their experience, and that isn't always the best way to go. Fact of the matter is we're all living longer, but the downside of that is that oftentimes we are, sicker, or we may have disabilities that require additional care.
Who should begin this conversation? Who should actually get it started, the kids or the parents? And how do you have that conversation?
Well, Cisco, you know, we have a saying at our office, which is smart people change before they're forced to change. And, you know, one of the instances that people are finding they got a two-story home, the bedrooms are upstairs, and they find that it's increasingly difficult for them to navigate that. Or they got laundry stuff in the basement, and it's like, Jesus, killing me. You then consider a one-floor plan. You start to look at that. And then, you know, one of the downsides, I think, of long-term care insurance is that it encourages people to stay in their home. And oftentimes their home is an isolating environment, and also it isn't set up for the kind of, infirmities or disabilities they may have.
Good advice. Thanks. Tony Ogorek, founder of Ogorek Wealth Management. Past programs, later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app. A check of the markets from Bloomberg next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour. Let's check in with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow is lower by 59 points now, or 0.2%. Make that 0.2%. I'm sorry. We're at 25,764. NASDAQ gaining 25 points, or 0.3%. And the S&P up just a fraction now. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down 0.3%. Big gains continue for crude oil futures. They're higher by more than 3%. Oil priced right at $68 a barrel. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.